Jesus Christ is still the King.
Welcome to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher on Iowa Catholic Radio. Every Wednesday, diving deep in the truth of the Catholic Church and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from the Mercy Live Up Studio.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner. We usually have Bud Maher with you today as well, but he is ill. So filling in for Bud Maher, co-hosting with me today, is John Wynn, Director of Faith Journey here at the Diocese of Des Moines. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Bo. Thanks for having me. That music is just amazing.
I know, yeah. Billy Joe Shaver, Jesus Christ is Still the King. That's some wonderful red dirt country there. We're joining you live from the Mercy Live Up Studio here in beautiful Des Moines. You can hear us on 1150 AM, 88.5 FM, 94.5 FM, and streaming live on the Iowa Catholic Radio app, which we have Blessman Ministry and the People's Abstract Company to thank. Like I said, Bud is out today because he has a weak tummy. His whole family is being laid low. So we also, though, today's the first day that we're trying out the webcam in the studio. So we wanted to bring in better looking enforcement. So John Wynn, we asked you. John, how are you doing?
I'm good. You know, Bishop Pates always said that I have a face radio. So
that's right. We all do. Now this webcam is really like throwing everything, right? So we are brought to you by Mercy College of Health Sciences, where Bud and I work. We have two new programs in the work, the Health Information Management degree and a degree in public health. So go on to mchs.edu if you want to find out more about that. We had a wonderful live broadcast from them last week, a radio remote, Mercy College of Health Sciences. We always want to thank them for not only employing Bud and I, but also for underwriting our show. John, you are the director of Faith Journey, which I have the privilege of getting to help out with as well. Do you want to just real quickly tell folks what that's about and if they're interested where they can go look?
Yeah, absolutely. Faith Journey does two things. One, we go into the Catholic schools in the diocese, and we do faith formation with all the faculty there. The other piece of the pie, in some sense, is the Catechetical Institute, and that's where you and Dr. Maher are helping, along with Katie Pratizio. And you can find more information on the Catechetical Institute at faithjourneyci.com. That, again, is faithjourneyci.com.
So when it came to knowing last night, very late, I got a text from Bud that he was not going to be able to make it due to his stomach not cooperating. And let's just be honest, that's some weak sauce, huh, John?
Yes.
No, I was kidding. There was no bun better to ask to come on at the last minute than John. We do, like I said, all sorts of stuff together. We work with Faith Journey. Mm-hmm. And so it was only natural that I asked you to come on and speak about something that I think really does relate to the general work you do in the diocese. When it comes to Catholic social teaching, there's a lot of things we talk about, but we're always trying to, you know, take a step back, take a step deeper, and ask even the more basic questions. And one of those is that we talk about the good a lot on this show.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to maybe talk about the good, especially when it comes to ethical reflection, especially when it comes to the idea of maybe utility, you know, when we think of good in terms of utility or consequences. I thought you'd be a natural to talk about this subject, John.
Yeah, you know, in fact, recently I was just reading a piece on what utilitarian is and really how it's progressed throughout the sort of the centuries, and how it's become from, you know, it became from fulfillment of desire all the way to satisfaction of sort of a group's desire. So and you see that quite a bit now too, you know. People are like, well, what is good is what the group wants.
Right. And what we want to talk about is how this runs into problems, and especially when considered next to the great and regal tradition of Catholic social teaching. So, friends, stick with us. In a minute, we'll be back to talk about the nature of the good with John Wynn, Director of Faith Journey here at Des Moines. Stick around. We'll see you in a bit.
Support for Faith on Trial comes from Rick McConville, attorney and counselor at law. Experience client-focused legal services throughout Central Iowa. Rick McConville offers a wide variety of civil and criminal trial practice, injury and damage recovery, and other services in serving clients for more than four decades. Coppola, McConville, Coppola, Carroll, Hockenberg, and Scalise, P.C., 2100 West Elm Parkway, West Des Moines, 515-453-1055, or online at csmclaw.com.
Thank you, Blessman Ministries, for sponsoring the new Iowa Catholic Radio app. If you have always wanted to share the compassionate heart of Christ with orphans and vulnerable children around the world, Blessman Ministries leads teams throughout the United States to South Africa every year. Their feeding programs are also providing nutritional support to nearly 10,000 children each week. To learn how you can go on a life-changing trip, go to blessmanministries.org.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. I'm Bo Bonner, and we have John Wynn with us today, Director of Faith Journey for the Diocese of Des Moines. Bud Marr is out with a sick tumbly, so we actually hope the whole Marr family gets to feeling better. I know that even the children are not feeling that great. So feel better, Mars. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Today we're going to talk about the nature of the good, in particular how oftentimes without thinking of it in an unreflective manner, people think about the good in terms of consequences and what is sort of best for them. And the sort of layman's term for this you'll hear is the ends justify the means.
Right.
The more technical term is utilitarianism, this idea that whatever brings about the most pleasure is worth doing. But we really want to talk about how this might run into some problems, and specifically if people have in mind just these ways when they're considering everything from politics to personal family dynamics.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at friendships, you know, immediately you think of Aristotle and you think of the three kinds of friendships that he talks about, but friendships of utility is one of those things. You know, you're friends with someone else so that they can do something for you. It's something good that you conceive, but it's really a more personal gain as opposed to being a friend with the other person for the sake of who they are. And so in that sense, then they're not conceived as a good, but rather it's the you know, what they can provide for you.
Right. And I mean, I think in like everyday sense, you know, we don't want to throw utility completely under the bus. Of course, like we make choices between what gas station we're going to go to or like what businesses we're going to maybe go to based on this idea of utility. Like I get a better deal out of this or that. But there is a way in which that is only surface level. But if that becomes something more than surface level, I hope you start to see, friends, how that really does change how we're going to consider all sorts of social relationships. Think about if your relationship with your mom and dad was only considered on the basis of utility. Well, at some point, parents lose their utility. And I mean, if that sounds really harsh, well, that's because utility as a measure sort of forces this. Like, we start talking about personal relationships and cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
And like you can imagine how talking about your children this way would start to be harsh, our friends. So then we have to ask ourselves, well, how deep do we actually consider many things in this sort of harsh light of a utilitarian calculus? And do we want to keep doing that?
Right, yeah. Because, I mean, as you were talking about, you know, thinking of your parents or your children that way, you know, if you thought of your children in a utilitarian manner, I mean, you'd get rid of them by 3 years old. I mean,
right. Well, I mean, it just depends, right? If it's a bad evening, you know, you might make a bad utilitarian decision.
Right. Maybe even the first few months, just because, you know.
Well, and I mean, you know, I know we're joking, but like if you think about it in those terms, like kids are a net drag on resources for a long time.
Absolutely.
And so then you start to go, if you're, you know, you'll hear utilitarians say, it's like, no, you're missing the point because, of course, kids are our future and that, like, there's some great gain that they're going to have later down your life. But then, again, if you're being brutal about this logic, what you're going to go is like, well, maybe.
Right.
They
exactly.
might.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I always think that my mom and dad were like, oh, you know, Bo's good at school. He's probably going to, like, you know, be a doctor. No, radio show host. So I don't know if they would have made the utilitarian calculus that I was worth it.
Right.
But, I mean, that starts to be two sections of the problem there. Is one is if you really are basing things on utility, things could turn out good for people. But how do we know? And then you start to go, well, what if it's, you know, strangely the case that negative actions benefit people? So, like, when I talk about this in class, I'll bring up, like, the Chernobyl disaster or the Three Mile Island. So for you kiddos that are too young to remember all the nuclear meltdown stories from, like, the 70s and 80s, these were some of the first big nuclear reactor disasters, and they ruined lives, they destroyed the environment, they were really bad. But I will say that nuclear safety got a lot better
right.
because of them. So under utilitarianism, are we going to say the really strange thing that that was the thing to do? It was good to let those nuclear reactor cores melt down so that more good could come out of it? And that right. just seems strange.
Right, that's exactly it. I mean, utilitarianism would allow you to justify some pretty weird things, if not evil things, in order for the greater amount of good to come out. You know what I mean?
Yep. This is Bo Bonner with John Wynn, the Uncommon Good. We're here at the Mercy Live Up studio. And I think that that's what we want to start leading into when we're talking about Catholic social teaching and Catholics allowing themselves to slip into this mode.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's ways in politics, there's ways in church politics, and again, day-to-day interactions, where we can start to make ourselves think that doing something that either the catechism tells us not to, against the Ten Commandments, against our consciousness, that we're like, you know, if we do this, it might be, so to speak, bad on its surface, but think of the good that will come out of it. And if you want to look at church history and all the strange bedfellows that the church has found herself with, I think that starts to be the key. Instead of living up to our higher calling, we fall back into this sort of utility measure of what choices that we're making.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when that starts to happen, what you've done is you've conceived sort of a temporal good without a supernatural end.
That's
you don't
right.
you don't see far enough ahead to see that there is a supernatural goal here that this good is supposed to fit in.
And I think that that's what people miss is when we talk about the church's understanding of the good. It's not that there's some few things, like 10 things that are good and everything else is bad and yucky and evil. Right. And what we're saying is actually the entire world was made good, but a good that fits into a hierarchy of other goods.
Mm-hmm.
I said this earlier when previewing our show on John's show. Hell is paved with good intentions, which, you know, right. some people think sounds like there's sort of some, you know, pithy thing that 85-year-olds say over coffee or Bo. But my point is that no one sets out to be the Voldemort or Skeletor or whatever 80s or 90s evil villain that we have in mind.
Sure.
Even the most disturbed people who do things that just horrify us think that either there is some good or that is the only good that they have. Even the person who, like, tortures someone for the sake of torturing them
right.
has so demented their mind that they think, this is the only good available to me now. No one does evil for the sake of evil.
Yeah, that's very Thomistic. You know, Aquinas would just simply say everyone does something because they conceive it as a good. They perceive it as a good. But the problem is, we're human beings, and so we mistake non-goods as goods.
Right.
That's where that word mistake comes from.
Yeah, that's right, to take it incorrectly and to have something that is lower, higher than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not relative, friends, but it is actually context-dependent.
Right.
So this is where you start talking in Catholic social teaching why something for a priest or a single person or a married family member, you know, parent, that there starts to be different responsibilities for all of them. It's not because everything is relative, so to speak, like it's all individuated,
right.
but there's a hierarchy of good that has different things to say depending on what we're doing. So that's not that we're going to do whatever so the best consequence comes. It's because who we are determines in that ordered way what good we are in an immediate way called to respond to.
Yeah, and I mean, immediately prior, you and I were talking about, you know, private property as a natural right and a natural good, but outside of the context of the supernatural understanding of who we are as human beings, creating the image and likeness of God and how the resources are supposed to be used in that sense, we can simply look at it from a utilitarian perspective and go, you know what? I have this right. This is all my stuff. And so I can use it in any way. And you bring up a good point, Bo, that, you know, in that sense, then the sin isn't from using the good, but it's abusing the good.
Right.
You know?
So this is the common good, the uncommon good. You're listening with Bo Bonner and guest John Wynn. I think that that's a great way to put this because the private property is something that we rightly hold very important. And we only need to go look to the history of the 20th century all over the globe about people who wanted to abolish private property and the sort of sinister goals they have in mind. But just like all good things are prone to fail, there's also every good reaction is prone to be an overreaction. And so when we talk about the good of private property, we have it in an understanding in a hierarchy of goods. And for Christian Catholic social teaching, this eminently goes back to that God made us, so to speak, the gardeners of creation. And why we have private property is less so you can do whatever you want. And it's more for you to have a responsibility over it.
That's so, absolutely right.
Yeah, so God saw fit to give rational humankind the ability to divvy up his creation more for the sake of responsibility than to do whatever you want. And so this is why even Thomas Aquinas, who I don't think anyone on earth would ever mistake as some sort of like freewheeling hippie relativist, will say in the time of starvation, it's no longer stealing if you go get, you know, like a potato from someone's field. If you're, because there isn't an absolute good of private property, but that doesn't mean that private property is not a good. It's a good intertwined with others.
That's right.
And if we start thinking of it that way, we will be less prone to bifurcating all these goods and then thinking that we're pressed to determine which is the best by some sort of utilitarian calculus.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up a good point there. You know, when you're starving, you do have the right to go and take a potato or whatever. And the idea is what the church calls the universal destination of goods. It's that God created this for the sake of the common good.
Right.
And the common good is discoverable. It's not, you know, willy-nilly sort of what you intend on making of it, but rather it's the thing that God's instilled into creation.
So when we, you know, call this show the uncommon good, you know, we're making a joke on that people don't talk about the common good enough. And so when we start talking about that, though, that word good, it becomes important to realize that we're not talking about the good, like you said, in some hidden way or in some personal way. We really want to say that, like you said, there's a discoverable common good, and that even if it becomes difficult, maybe what we need to do in any one particular instance, that there's a way in which that concept can govern what we might do next more than the ends justifying the means sort of idea. Now, the good is an end. It's a, you know, the Thomistic way to talk about it is a telos, which means a goal, a thing we're striving for, a thing we're all going towards. But the reason that like that end doesn't justify any mean below is because that good is hierarchical and ordered. And so it so to speak, distributes itself in a descending way in which all lower goods, when done correctly, participate in that higher one.
Right.
And so when we will, that's why it's actually possible to give up a lower good for the sake of a higher good. So it's not that, you know, people will talk about like Maslow's pyramid of needs. And sure, when you're considering other human beings about why they might not be listening to you, it's absolutely true. If someone's hungry, they probably aren't going to listen to a lecture about Catholic social teaching. On the other hand, though, the precise reason that we think martyrs are to be lauded, people who willingly died for the sake of a higher good as opposed to a lower one, life, which is a very basic one, is because we do believe that it is possible to make sacrifices of lower goods for the sake of higher ones.
It's because they've aligned their value to the good. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, a lot of people think that the things that are good are only things that I value. But it's not because your value that determines the good, but rather it's the good that should determine your value. And so the martyrs who die for the good have aligned their value to the good itself.
And, you know, this is a great way to sort of like wrap up this conversation, because people often think that they just sort of have innate desires, like they just come about either through genetics or randomly. And then that's whatever they desire they should be able to fulfill. But I think what you're pointing to, and we've sort of talked about this before in the show, actually, usually we get our desires by mirroring other people. We just don't really realize it.
Right. Yeah.
So a lot of what learning to love the good or desire it is precisely who we put ourselves around and what sort of culture exists around individuals. And so if you have a culture that really doesn't present this common good, you can't be surprised when your young ones don't desire it.
Right.
And I think that, like, sometimes I'm dumbfounded by the dumbfoundedness of parents who are like, I don't understand why my kid likes X, Y, and Z. And you're like, look, they're surrounded by a culture that tells them whatever they think is innate is worthwhile. And we haven't done a good enough job of, like you said, accustoming them, comporting them, habituating them to this common good.
Which is why I make pho at my house just about every other week, so my children can learn to love the food of the motherland.
That's right. Yeah, and as we should point out is that this is also Bud and I's pretty much favorite food as well. So we have been accustomed to the good of the motherland. If you have never had Vietnamese noodle soup, pho, you are missing out, friends. Well, we're going to come back here pretty quick, and we're going to have a new segment. We're not going to do Great Moments in Church History because I think it's just wrong to do it without Bud. So John is going to be the conduit to our sort of secondary segment we're going to have. It's going to be called Ridiculous Questions. And what I mean by this is we've all had times in life where we're tracking with some sort of conversation that's going on, and we realize that we have the ridiculous question, meaning like this really basic one, that if we only knew what this term meant, we'd be able to follow the conversation better. And my point is that, friends, I'm here to answer your ridiculous questions. Bud is here to answer your ridiculous questions. And today, John is here as well. So we're going to be back in a minute. We look forward to ushering this new era of we're not going to do away with
great moments
in church history. Just let me, you know, don't think that. But this is going to be also one of the segments that we're going to intersperse in the show. So please stick around. We'll be back in a minute with the Uncommon Good on live from Mercy Live Up Studios.
Looking for a family doctor? Vitae Family Cares physician Greg McKernan, a DO, has practiced for 27 years, seeing patients of all ages. Vitae is Latin for life, and as a pro-life physician, Dr. McKernan is certified in NAPRO technology. Located at 50th and I-235 in West Des Moines, VitaeFamilyCare.com.
Programming support for Catholic Women Now is provided by Iowa's injury attorney, Fred Haas. For over 30 years, Fred Haas has helped injured Iowans recover financial, physical, and emotional losses from car, truck, and motorcycle accidents, work-related injuries, and injuries due to negligence. Most importantly, providing the professional, personal, and responsive legal counsel that everyone deserves. Fred, double D, Haas, double A, the Des Moines Law Offices of Fred Haas. While we have time, let us do good.
St. Vincent de Paul's assists those living in poverty to become self-sufficient. Learn more at svdpsm.org or call 515-282-8327. This message brought to you by Homemakers Furniture.
We're back to the Uncommon Good. I'm Bo Bonner. We have John Wynn subbing in for Bud Maher today because Bud's tummy is hurt. John Wynn, director of Faith Journey. We've been talking about the nature of the good itself. Because Bud is sick, we're not going to go ahead and do Great Moments in Church History. It would just be wrong without him. So what we're going to do instead is introduce a secondary segment that we're going to call Ridiculous Questions. Now, what I always tell my class is you might have a ridiculous question that you're embarrassed to ask out loud, but that's why I get paid to be a teacher, is so you ask me instead of some bum on the street or in Google who Lord knows what they will tell you. So, John, you're going to help me. I'm sure that you've had
You want me to play this student?
Yeah, no. I was going to say, I'm sure that you've encountered some ridiculous questions as well.
Yeah, I nothing comes to mind at the moment, but yeah, I remember some experiences in when I was teaching at Dowling.
And the thing with me is that people act all embarrassed, but I want you to ask, you know, the questions with me in the classroom so that it's just not some like random guy at Taco John's helping you out. What I have in mind is I was teaching a Christian ethics class at Tulsa University for a whole half of a semester until it became apparent one day, and I asked pretty much bluntly, and 9/10 of the class didn't realize that Christians believe in the resurrection of the body. And then I went,
we don't?
No, that's what they thought. They didn't realize we believe in the resurrection of the body. And I was like, oh my gosh, this whole 3 months so far has pretty much been wasted if you don't understand the importance right. of the resurrection of the body in Christianity. So look, folks, we talk about the common good, the church's social teaching. We throw out a lot of terms. I was getting made fun of for saying the word bifurcated, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you the opportunity for Bud and I, if you go to Facebook, we have a show page called The Uncommon Good. And if you want to message there or friend me, Bo Bonner, on Facebook, and if you message us ridiculous questions, ones that you don't want to like have your name attached to, we won't say your name. We'll just say your first initial and where the question came from, and we'll answer them on the show. So I hope we start to get ridiculous questions that we can answer. So, John, let's actually take that one from the students in Tulsa University. Why is it so important to realize that Christians believe in the resurrection for the sake of understanding the Catholic social teaching?
Well, we were at the Catechetical Institute the other night, and we were talking about the resurrection. And a favorite theologian of mine is Roger Haidt, but he's come under review as of in the near recent past because of his understanding on the resurrection itself, of yeah. Jesus' resurrection and the resurrection itself. Insofar as he says, you know, it's just a symbolic thing as opposed to the actual
resurrection of the body.
Right. Yeah. And of course, the reason for that is because this is good.
Yes.
You talk about good. This is good.
Right. And I think that if we're going to talk about the hierarchy of goods or the martyrs, if there's not a bodily resurrection, there's so many things that start to really unravel for what Catholic social teaching is trying to say. For one, if, you know, there is no resurrection, then why would you ever be martyred?
Right.
But then if our life after death is just sort of this Casper the Friendly Ghost, you know, floating around,
sure.
there starts to be this weird idea about then why did we take so much attention of habituating our bodies here on earth?
Right.
Or why is there purgatory? Or why is there, you know, prayers or any of this? When we start to realize that in our bodies we will have a communion with God and each other in heaven, the resurrection starts to have political social implications here on earth.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the creation account and you see God forming Adam and Eve, well, why form them? Because you know, with initial justice, nothing is wrong yet.
Right.
Why even form them into bodies if it wasn't meant to be that way?
So, folks, yeah. it's absolutely the case that Catholics teach that you will be resurrected in the body. And this is, and again, like, this might sound like a ridiculous question, but if you didn't know that, there can be all sorts of things you go, then why this about Catholic social teaching? Why that? But because of the glory of the resurrected body that Christ himself has and that is promised for those who run the race, who are baptized, who are raised at the end of time, because we will be raised in our body, we have that to look forward to and also the implications to live with now.
Yeah. Otherwise, I think we'd just be angelic beings.
That's
which
right.
we aren't.
No, and we are definitely, definitely not. That's why I need to drink all this coffee I've been drinking. Well, John, it has been fantastic. Thank you on a short notice filling in for Bud. It's been great to get to talk to you about all of this.
Thanks, Bo.
One more time, let people know where they can go look up Faith Journey.
Yeah, go to faithjourneyci.com.
Well, so this is The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner. Bud Marr, hopefully we'll be back feeling better next week. This was from Mercy Live Up Studio. Thanks again to Mercy College of Health Sciences for underwriting our show. And may the Prince of Peace rule in your hearts, in your families, in our cities, in the entire nation. God bless everyone. We'll see you next time. Thank you.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Marr is heard Wednesdays at 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. on Iowa Catholic Radio and on the official Iowa Catholic Radio app.